I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
Okay, welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. Kyle Porter here with Mark Immelman. Mark, last time we talked, you were your college golf team was contending in an event, and you were taking a break to do some media work with me. How did they end up in that event? Did they know you were gone, and how did they perform without you?
I think they knew I was gone. I was, 30 minutes with five guys playing. Well, in fact, it was four because our number three guy went down before the final round with a neck spasm. So playing four against everyone else's five. So 30 minutes I can skip away because, you know, there's five guys you got to see. So I think they knew I was away. Maybe they listened to the podcast and they're like... But they played well. I mean, four guys. We shot one over par 289 in the final round. Finished fifth against a field that had four of the top five teams in the nation competing. So, I was content. I mean, we could have done better. We were young and we're good, but I was proud of the way they hung in given the adversity they had to deal with.
Yeah, that's great. Speaking of young and good, Cameron Champ, Safeway Open. Really a cool story that kind of emerged and one that, I don't know. I got to say, I didn't really see it coming just in terms of the way he's played since he won this time last year, or I guess a little bit later, but about 11 months ago when he won for the first time. You were on the Safeway Open call for the first few days. The way it kind of transpired on the weekend, I mean, this is one of the, you know, it's a little different because it's the fall. You can't really call it a story of the year, but it was one of the, I think, cooler moments of the year that took place in Napa.
It certainly was. I actually tweeted about this morning when I just was going over some notes and kind of catching up a little bit before work. And I tweeted that everything about this Cameron Champ victory was what makes golf great. You know, he has a young guy that won in the fall last year. The game sort of went sour with this influx of media attention and all of the off-course demands that were suddenly placed on a very humble, very modest guy. And so he didn't deal with that very well. But, you know, he went back to the drawing board, figured it out, and came back and played well in his first event down in the Sanderson Farms Championship. I think was just outside the top 25 there. And then here in Napa, he's commuting back and forth from home because of his ailing grandfather. And to win, that's so difficult. And to win with all that emotion, I mean, the way he broke down and just absolutely sobbed on the shoulder of his caddy on the final green, it speaks to how much this stuff means. Because I think sometimes we numb ourselves to the fact that this is a big deal. You know, as a fans, we're like, oh, well, so some dude won and he hasn't won enough. This is a big deal. And when someone says, and this is Cameron Champ sort of summarized, he's like, this may be the biggest victory of my career, going forward even. And when someone summarizes it like that, then you know what's gone into it, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears of it all, and obviously the emotion of this could potentially be the last time his grandfather Mac might see him play. And so it was just so great, and I was moved by the victory, honestly.
Yeah, I thought it was great also. And to get into the Masters, to call that kind of the last gift to give to his grandfather who helped teach him the game. I mean, that's a, I don't know, man, that's a pretty cool deal. And the way he did it, I thought was impressive too. You know, I think if you look back at Sanderson where he won last year, I want to say he was like top three in that field in putting. And this week he wasn't. He did it with ball striking, which is what he's got to do if he's going to win consistently on the PGA Tour. He's number one in driving, obviously. But then number one, I think he's number one from tee to green as well. And I think he finished like 20th in putting. That's a formula for Cam Champ. And, you know, I think it's such a weird deal because you're like, well, where was this like for the last 12 months? And I think that there's probably been just some ups and downs that are more normal than we sometimes see. Like, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what the day-to-day is like. We don't know what injuries are or are not there. And so to do it twice in 2 years, I think that really, I don't know. I'm pretty impressed by that. And that gives me I'm looking at him through different lenses, I think, going forward.
Well, check this out. I've said this before, you've heard me probably ad nauseum about this, where the golf swing is, there's this invisible effect on the swing, and it's affected by one's emotions and one's psyche and those sort of immeasurables, if you will. And just, you talk about the ball striking. Yes, Adam Hadwin making a big run because he had played with Champ, that is, played with a big lead the entire day. All of a sudden, that gap is narrowed to one. And he gets down there on 18, this par 5. And I got to tell you, it's single file down there. I mean, that's a narrow fairway with trouble down the left in those redwoods and then bunkering on the right. Hit them in either one and you're likely making 5 par. And he gets down there and blasts one like 380 yards or whatever it was. Basically hits a medium iron into this par 5 and records the victory with a closing birdie. So it's a testament to the boy's metal, to the focus. And when you get up and you deliver like that under pressure, you know, when it's the highest of pressure, that is a big deal for any golfer, albeit a young golfer in this case, to say, man, I can do this when the pressure's up. And he can take those two strikes down the final hole with him for as long as he lives.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, he called this probably the greatest moment or the most important victory of his career, no matter what he does or doesn't do going forward. So big win for him. On the other side of the pond, we had Victor Perez won the Dunhill Links over at the Old Course at St. Andrews. My first response to seeing that Victor Perez won the Dunhill Links was, wait, who?
Yeah, heck
yeah. He's a Frenchman who lives in Scotland and played golf at New Mexico, which is not something that I saw coming. Yeah, what are your thoughts on this? He held off Matthew Southgate by one stroke. He beat a field that included Tommy Fleetwood, Rory McIlroy, Justin Rose. Those guys were all on the field, and it's a cool tournament. You know, it's Kings Barnes, it's Carnoustie, and then it's the Old Course a couple of times with amateurs involved. Justin Timberlake was there. Rory got to play with his dad. They tied for first. But just takeaways from the first European Tour win for Victor Perez.
Well, he was anyone going to college, and this is not the college coaching Homer in me, okay? I mean, if you play well in university, you've got some game. I don't care what your name is. And playing at New Mexico obviously honed his skills. In 2014, he played in the Eisenhower for France. And the Eisenhower Trophy is a big event for amateurs. And he finished second there behind a dude called John Rahm, okay? So this boy Perez can go. And then for the young golfer coming out, it's just oftentimes – you know, getting your chance. And Yeri comes down the final stretch of holes there at the Old Course. I mean, think of the emotion of this. The weather's not great, just by the by. And 17 is probably the hardest par 4 in the world. And it's got all this history behind it. And he gets up there, smashes one down the fairway, hits it on the green in regulation, which if you do that, you should get a free game because that green is the size of my living room. And then two putts for 4 to get the one stroke lead. And then think about this. You're playing for your victory. You're playing Southgate's right alongside. And then you make a par 4 on the final hole at the home of golf to win your first victory. I mean, that's the stuff of which dreams are made, okay? Especially for a young European. And And he's been around the block, played good in college, went to the Challenge Tour, you know, made his way through the Challenge Tour, finishing third over there, and then got on the European Tour and has steadily progressed. And now a couple of victories as a Challenge Tour player, and now one on the European Tour. Man, what a cool story.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, he was kind of asked about the future of his game and what his schedule is going to be like and stuff like that in his press conference. And he was like, look, I want to enjoy this. Like, how often do you get to shoot 22 under at the Old Course and Carnoustie and in an event like this? He was like, that's a big deal. Like, that's an important thing for me. So, yeah, he's up to number, I think, 72 in the world. Yeah, he's number 72. Cameron Champ.
And just a blink of an eye, incidentally, with that 72, just a little bit from getting in the World Golf Championships events. And then all of a sudden, it's a whole new world. So, yeah. In what sort of, what kind of victory is this? And then he has a guy with lots of confidence. There's still a few events in the European Tour schedule this year. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets himself inside of the top 60 by year's end.
Yeah, for sure. And Cameron Champ also in the top 70. He's right at 70. So he moves up to the highest ranking that he's ever been in his career. So big weekend for two young, pretty talented guys, apparently. So, we're going to talk a few more leftovers, takeaways from both the Dunhill Links and the Safeway Open. But first, let's hear from this week's sponsor.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, Mark. I think we got to start with we're going to stay in Scotland. We're going to talk your guy, my guy, Rory.
When he said the stuff after round, I'm like, oh, here we go, really?
he's not pleased with the European Tour setups. He said, I shoot 15 under again, and I'm T30, or I think he finished T26. He thinks the course setups on the European Tour are too easy. Mm-hmm. Doesn't enjoy playing them. He wants it to be hard, and he's right about it being hard. Hard setups, difficult courses that require shot shaping. They always they give a disproportionate advantage to the best players in the world, and so that's what he should hope for. Did you agree with the way he kind of presented this right after the Dunhill Links on Sunday?
Rory's a candid guy. We know this. Everyone knows it. It's why we love him. But there's been one or two situations where he's had the old foot and mouth syndrome afterwards. I mean, I think back to the Olympic Games statement, and there's been one or two of them, but that's why folks enjoy Rory, because there's a candor about him that is palpable. It's palpable, really. And I think the timing of it was wrong. You don't catch a guy in flash media, and then all of a sudden the frustration after a round of golf is voiced. So perhaps he could have timed the release a bit better. But, you know, his point is well-founded. He committed to playing on the PGA Tour of the full season, and it panned out with a victory in the FedEx Cup and, of course, the Player of the Year thing. And to his point, you know, as a golf instructor and a golfer, I can see it. You know, course management is a big deal. Strategy is a big deal. Shot making, obviously. And on long, big, firm golf courses like we get at certain times of the year on the PGA Tour. Look, through the summertime with summer rainfall here in the States, courses get soft and they get easy. So it can be a free-for-all at times. But largely, the PGA Tour courses are more difficult just because in Europe it's damp and it's wet and you've got to set golf courses up around the wind and that sort of stuff. I mean, if the wind had to get up, we saw what happened at the last Open when they're at St. Andrews, which is short, everyone knows it, the wind got up and it was unplayable and they had to stop play. So you can't have firm and fast greens. It's next to impossible. So
yeah,
it's six of the one and a half a dozen of the other for me. Does he have a point? Absolutely. I think more than anything else, perhaps he's just trying to, you know, vindicate his decision to committing to the PGA Tour, because I'm sure, I don't know for a fact, but I'm sure he's taken a lot of grief from folks over in Europe because he's like there. Rory's the man. And they want him back over there, and so he needs to sort of justify what he's done. So was the timing great? Not really. Is it true? Yes. So I'm sort of sitting the fence on this thing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You see Rory come out against stuff that that benefits the best players in the world, right? Like we talked about slow play earlier this year. Like the faster guys play, the more it benefits the best shot makers, because you add more time in and it gives guys that are lesser shot makers, they have more time to make decisions to try and hit the right shot. Like decision making is a skill anyway. And I think what he's talking about here, it's also better for him. It's better for Brooks Koepka. It's better for Dustin Johnson, all these guys. He did post on Instagram on Monday, Mark. He said, kind of a mini statement. He said, "I understand voicing my concerns about golf course setups in Europe to the media at a pro-am event on benign links courses wasn't the right place to do it or the right people to talk to about it. I was venting yesterday, but I can assure you it came from the right place. Strategy, course management, and shot making are important aspects of tournament golf that are slowly taken out of the game at the top level, not just in Europe, but worldwide." He's right about that. "I would personally like to see tougher setups in Europe because it will produce better, more complete young players in the future. And that can only be a good thing for the game and our Ryder Cup chances going forward."
Look, he's got a good point there with the Ryder Cup thing. But like I said, it's golf is more than just hitting a golf ball. And I liked the fact that he observed, you know, for everyone listening, because there are always ears, you know, when Rory talks, that course management and strategy are an important deal of playing good golf. And those are enhanced, to your point, when conditions are challenging.
Yeah, and I mean, we see this at the majors, right? And it's hard to, I think sometimes it's hard to differentiate, because you're like, oh, well, it's a major. Sure, the leaderboard's great because all the best players are playing. Well, it's also great because those are most of the time courses that demand the best shots, right? Like we saw that at Portrush. Look at that final leaderboard. It was amazing. And we see it so often at the Open Championship and the U.S. Open and the Masters and even at the PGA this year. It was a more difficult setup, at least in terms of score to par. So I like that because it produces interesting leaderboards. And I agree with him that worldwide, I would like to see tougher setups as well. It just becomes tough because you don't want to turn everything into the U.S. Open, right? Like, that's not good for your fans. They don't want to see pars and, you know, bogeys be good scores. It's just it's hard to marry championship golf with creating a good product for your fans.
Yes, exactly right. I mean, we had the same thing at Augusta National every year. You know, when it's firm and fast and the weather's not good in springtime, people complain there's not enough roars. And you know, folks like birdies. It's just how it is. But the good players also like it when par is a good score. But, you know, sometimes that war of attrition, like we sometimes get at the U.S. Open, that can be a grind for the fans. So it's such a tightrope that the organizers have to walk as they set golf courses up week in and week out.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. Other takeaways from the weekend. I thought Zach Blair, a golf Twitter favorite, favorite of the golf Twitter world. His T4 was kind of sneaky at Safeway. He opened with 75 and he closed like 66, 66, 68. That's a big deal for somebody like him. Basically a third of the points he needs to finish top 125 based on what last year's numbers were for the FedEx Cup. And to do that before before October in this new season. That's a big deal for somebody who was on the Korn Ferry Tour last year.
No doubt. I mean, you talk about golf course setups. Silverado is just, there's two golf courses there. The tournament course is just a gem. And it's you can get after it in the morning, but when the afternoon winds blow down those hills over there and the course firms up, it becomes a handful. And it's just north of 7,000 yards, par 72. And so you saw an interesting leaderboard there too. I mean, Champ and Hadwin and Leishman. It was great for me to see Leishman come back because he's a guy that withdrew a few weeks ago with real back issues at the Greenbrier. Charles Howell played well, of course, Zach Blair, and JT was sort of the form guy coming in. Fratelli played nice. And Zigzag Zhang, who I'd talked about in a previous podcast. I mean, it was a fun one, and it's cool to see the mix at that golf course of long and short, accurate blasters, you know, good short games and such, because I guess to Rory's point, a firmish golf course is going to, you know, going to bring out the guy who's playing the best at the time.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I think that with guys like ZB, there's only, you know, and I think he probably has said this, there's only like eight courses where he can like really contend, right? Mm-hmm. Like we saw him contend at Sony a couple years ago. You know, Harbour Town, like there's only a handful.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Do what?
Like Colonial as well. Same sort of deal. It's just like Silverado, when you get rewarded for putting the ball in play off the tee. And I was out there, the rough wasn't punitive at all, and it was sparse. But, you know, with the greens just a little firmer, if you're coming out of just 1-inch rough and small greens, it's enough to, you know, trip you up, and you could paper cut yourself to death. So, It's the cool place for Zach, and it was cool to see him play well.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, those guys all finished top 10. Colin Morikawa sneaked in a top 10 as well. Did you see this? Yeah, he's amazing. Did you see this this failed driver test story on Golf Channel?
I saw the story. I mean, I didn't know they were testing. It was Monday and Tuesday before I got there, so that's probably why. But, you know, the tour had warned folks about it, so they're remaining true to the word. So here we are.
You've been around it for a long time at a really high level, longer than I have. I think I'm struggling to figure out, like, how big of a deal this is, because it sounds like a huge deal if people are playing equipment that's not – basically fitting the standards that these organizations have set. Now, some people are arguing, well, it doesn't create that big of an advantage. Well, fine, but any advantage, it doesn't feel like the attention that this story is getting is commensurate with how big of a deal it actually is. But what are your thoughts on that?
It is a big deal. Let me tell you this for free. Everyone listening to this, anyone who plays golf, you know, you got a faster driver face and the ball goes just 10 yards farther. That's almost a club closer. You're almost a club closer to the green. And then when you're there, that one's going 10 yards longer. So it's effectively a club and a half, if not two, difference in what you're hitting into targets. And so that enhances your chance of success. Just ask the shot. Ask the strokes gained people. You love that sort of stuff. So it's a deal, and it has to be watched. And I think the important thing for folks who just the drive-bys, you know, with this information, this is not targeting the players. This is targeting manufacturers to say, hey, let's keep tabs on what's going on here, because look, we all know that the distance game right now is almost getting out of hand. So something has to be done. And starting with a driver, look, the golf ball needs to be addressed. We all know it. But at least starting with a driver and then enforcing it, I think is something that's very necessary.
Yeah, I do too. And I hope it garners more attention, and that, you know, I think eventually it would be good if there's testing for everybody that's in the field. There's this sort of, the PGA Tour sort of instituted this random testing, which is good. And obviously it's producing results, which is not good, but you know, I think to have it for everybody would create a better playing field going forward. But yeah, that was something that caught my eye that seemed like a little bit of a bigger deal than we're making it. Okay, last thing, and then I got to run. I know you hate this game, but we're going to play it. whose career? Okay, so I love talking about this stuff. And you know, once I get you going, I know you do too. But whose career are you taking going forward? So this is not like forget about or try to forget about everything that they've done in terms of like everybody's got a blank resume just from September 30th, 2019 going forward.
Blank resume. You realize that? But anyway, go.
Well, yeah, but this is I deal in hypotheticals, Mark. This is what we do. We just spew hypotheticals all day. This is the media world.
All right, cool. Go.
Okay, Cam Champ coming off that win at Safeway Open. So you don't get to count that, but you get him going forward or Victor Hovland.
That's a really good one. And they're both intriguing in many respects. There's so many reasons to like Cameron Champ, but I have seen Victor Hovland play well on many different style golf courses. We've just seen him go over to the BMW and play great there. He played awesome at Pebble Beach in a US Open setup. You know, in college, he played in Stillwater where the wind can pump, you know, right? So because of that, I mean, I'm saying by a nose, I think Victor Hovland. And then, look, there's more to it. As a professional golfer, oftentimes it's the not golf stuff that earns you all the dollars. And Cam Champ, he's a stud, man. But Hovland's got that million-dollar smile and a real quick wit. So I think that also pushes him over the edge for me.
Yeah, I like it. I'm going to go Hovland as well, to the surprise of nobody.
Why?
He's my guy. I think if you like turn the screws on me and said Hovland or Wolf, I think I'd go Hovland there too.
Okay, remind me when I have to pick a college team at Columbus State. I don't bring you in for the decision because you clipped your favorites.
Yeah, I am not an unbiased third party. Okay, this one's a little. This one will get you thinking a little bit because it's – I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it, but the one that I thought of – so JT finishes T4 at Safeway. Rory obviously does what he does at the Dunhill Link. So JT or Rory, just from right now, September 30th going forward?
Who are you going?
I think Rory, but I think there's definitely a case to be made for JT because – He's younger and, you know, and I think that hungrier is the wrong word. I think Rory still cares plenty and is hungry. But I think that there's a sense of like Rory's done a ton in the game and JT still feels like he has a ton left to do, maybe more so than Rory. I don't know. But that's kind of the sense that I get. And, you know, I think Rory's game overall is more complete, but I think JT's pretty close behind him.
You know what? You're one of my favorite writers. I love to listen to you. You're one of my favorite writers, Kyle. And you know that conjunction but discounts everything that's come before it. So you made a statement about Rory but JT and about Rory but. Hey, I hear you. This is a tough one. I'm going to go with Rory. Just because all and sundry, and I think even Justin Thomas, who I have massive respect for, I've called him shooting 59. I've had my own two eyes on this guy winning events out there on the golf course, and he is good. He's like special generational good. But you ask any player in the locker room on the PGA Tour who's the most talented golfer at you, they would all say McIlroy. Yeah. And he's young, he's fit. I think he's got life in order with these five P's, you know, the perspective and the patience and all this sort of stuff. Rory has graduated to McIlroy 2.0, and I think the four majors that are on the resume, that's great. I think he's figured out who he needs to be for the next, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18 years, whatever it is. And I feel like he's going to have a really good time of it over the next few years.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, last one, and I'll go first on this one as well. Tommy Fleetwood or Colin Morikawa? And this is hard too. I'll go with Morikawa just because he's so much younger. You know, Fleetwood's, what, 28, 29, something like that.
Oh, he's over the hill. My goodness gracious me.
Yeah, he's almost a grandfather, I think, actually. But yeah, Morikawa's special. I think we're going to look back on this trio, this Morikawa Hovland Wolf trio, and be like, wow, like we even like as much as we hyped them up and talked about them, like I think there's a scenario in which we underrated how good each one of them is going to be.
Hey, you know that sometimes you've joked about it and you'll make a statement and I remember that and you would say, well, that's a tweet that's not going to age well. Well, I want to remember what you've just said because you're talking about those three guys. Don't forget Sung J.M. Don't forget Sung J.M., whatever you do. Because there's a real, real good young breed of players in the tour right now.
Joaquin Neiman.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, Morikawa is great. But I'm going with Fleetwood on this one just because he plays on two tours. Yeah. And so as a result, you know, Morikawa is basically playing on the PGA Tour. And not that the golfers in Europe aren't great, but the PGA Tour is where everyone wants to play. Case in point, Rory McIlroy. So week in and week out in all the big events, which Morikawa I expect will be playing because of just his game, you know, I think Fleetwood has more chances. And he's already won a race to Dubai. The way he plays over there, he's going to have that sort of stuff as well. He's a global type. And I think because he's the global golfer, not because of – this is not a dollars and cents and a physical skill deal. I'm just going with Tommy because he plays globally.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no wrong answer on any of these three, but I do think it's fun to talk about. It's fun to just kind of project and figure out where these guys are going to be in 5 years, 10 years, even next year. I think it's difficult to do. So,
And then you up at the next event and Cam Champ comes up and says, like, dude, seriously? Yeah. Or Mark, when I ask him for an interview, he's like, no, remember when? I was like, oh.
That's great stuff. Okay, Mark, that's all we got for today. I will be back with a special guest pending his acceptance of my invitation to preview Vegas later in the week. So be looking for that. Mark, we will catch you next week, and we will talk soon.
All right, brother. Take care.
See ya, bro.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.